agent can only charge a home that's under $300,000, you can charge a 5 or 7% real estate fees. A home that's over $300,000, you can cap it. You're only gonna sell it. The maximum you can charge for a real estate fee is 1.5%. You do all these things, you're not taking anything away from anybody, but you're getting the agent to say, we've got to sell. Just like in, you go into a store, you've got a TV on the shelf, and it says $200. If nobody's going to buy it, it's going to go down to 150. If nobody's going to buy it, it's going to go down to 125, because the guy has to sell TVs. Same with houses. You could do that, and you can bring down the prices of houses. And then the people, without even having to get raises in income, because the price of the house came down, the price of the mortgage came down, that person is now can afford to get their starter home. Things go away.
So with existing homes too. So you just have to work hard too. So the mortgage, you can only use net as your income for your mortgage, and no spousal sharing or group sharing in that way. It's what your net is.
Yeah. So that's just to get, because you've got to basically turn it around to there where they want to sell houses. Because it's obscene what's going on right now when you turn the housing market, which is an essential service, into a commodity market. You can't do that. You've got to bring life back to the people. Just a person that has a living wage supports the community that's around him. Mm-hmm. It's just it's very, very uplifting to see the little, business-like that's going on in Van Creek Hill. Local. That's basically what you need.
Yeah. Other people will, as long as the price is different, poor people are going to want the cheaper deal sort of thing, but people tend to want to support their communities and stuff by, as an, extension.
Start to use the money that's in a community for that community.
On the mortgages, just a fun fact, so the Federal Reserve, they capitalized the banks of in America or whatever. So after the 2008 crash that happened because investment vehicles, securities or whatever, mortgage-backed securities, that sort of thing. So of course, if the mortgage market takes a dump, then mortgage securities also going to take a dump sort of along with that. So the Federal Reserve, since 2012, this is the third iteration, so they call it quantitative easing, where they're basically more or less just print and pop money into the economy. They for at least a couple of years, since about 2013, they're buying up $40 billion of these toxic mortgage assets to date, quietly, no one even knows what's going on. $40 billion a month being spent to buy big feed off the balance sheets of the lower banks or whatever.
But no, it's how do you, like you say, and you put incentives not to build new houses. I mean, right now we don't need urban sprawl.
Is there that many people that are just suddenly a mortgage right here in Ottawa? These houses are going to sit there empty probably for years.
It's the difference between where you have
I could never come here. Society is hanging by such a fragile thread, but something about your iPod.
That we have, even compared to American society, is astronomical. And that all falls by the wayside when you start creating. want, but I think what's happening in Toronto or is happening is once you start like creating these like commodity fuel centers that they don't have any lifeblood in them anymore. They're just, everything is working just in time. Like everything is like strategic planning, and it's not.
It's not organic.
There's no lifeblood in the city. You could probably, for every city now, their murder statistics are probably what it used to be for the entire Canadian population for 1 year. Now that's probably the murder rate in the Toronto is probably what the murder rate for the entire country was. Something where they have like probably 10,000 deaths a day, you know, there's no, well, even closer than that, just look what happened after Katrina. Like to see a body rolling down the river, or a body, like a bloated body on the side of the road, was, you know, it became normalized. Yeah, it lost its eminent like value, because it was just, there was no
context.
The law, the whole, what we take for granted was broken, because there was no police there, or ambulance service, there was nothing. So.
Yeah, I also, you know, some stuff too, I mean, like, I guess, probably not going to say the crime budget, but like, you see cuts to, like, services too, and then people are like, oh, look, it's failing, and then it's like, but yeah, but like you guys took like all this money and just asked them to like figure it out kind of thing. So I mean, you can't really say that about like the crime budget, because apparently that's likely been, you know, on the cost of increase, which might actually be a reflection of the
incinerator in the trunk, and then off you go.
I
grab one guy with a big score, and then you say, oh, look at this, man. What's your dealer going to do now when you tell him that the cops just stole this off you?
See, that's the thing. Actually, you know what? It's kind of funny that you mentioned that. I was going to make a different point, but there was some kind of committee-ish looking thing where Donald Trump was like, at like a table with like other members of his cabinet or whatever,
yeah.
And somebody came to him. They were describing about how like they wanted to require, like this is like something in Texas, and so there was a senator that was going to push a bill that was going to more or less say, okay, we need a conviction of like, you know, a drug related offense or whatever to seize this person's assets. And I think it was like construed that maybe he thought like they meant like the drug-related evidence, which, you know, obviously we should, regardless of whatever, like that sort of stuff should be, you know,
like violent protesters, people with violent protesters, that they can seize their assets as like
as long as they're convicted, as what I'm saying. Like, so this senator was going to push a bill. It was in Texas, which is close to the border, which probably has much higher concentration of drug-related offenses, but this basically was going to suggest that you need a conviction to, as a general thing, seize assets of this person or whatever. And that, because right now, you know, they can, like, sort of take your stuff on like a suspicion basis, And it's not, you know, extends further than just drug offenses too, because I mean, like, you know, you could talk about, like, you know, at some point where, I don't know, I can't think of some of the bona fides or assets over right off the top of my head, but, like, the point is that, like, there should be, like, if they can't prove that you did something wrong, if they don't have, like, flimsy enough, you know, if they find evidence on you, you did something wrong. They should be able to reasonably prove you've committed a crime here, we've got evidence, we've got it on the camera, like, whatever. If you can't have something that will stand up in court, then, like, I think that's stable enough to necessarily...
I just
want to
go into steal drugs.
Well, so this...
I'm going to stop you on the street, I'm going to frisk you.
Well, we need a way, that's why I said we need to track, like, there needs to be...
I'm sorry, standing on the street selling little silver foil packages in your pocket, and I should respect your rights? No.
No.
I'm going to come up, and I'm going to take the little silver foil out of your pocket, and I'm going to let you explain to the guy you got it from why you don't have his money, and then he's going to kick your ass, and you're going to say, fuck this shit, I'm not doing it anymore. That's what I mean. There's no court involved. Just come here, give me that. Off you go. Come here, give me that, off you go. All this stuff goes into the incinerator. You go around all these neighborhoods and you let the DEA worry about the big fish. You're going around and you're just kicking ass.
Yeah.
And the only thing
I would add to that is that I would say there should be something that needs to be they already have like a camera on the dash or whatever, but like I want to keep those drugs if they're in that incinerator, they're like a black hole, you can't just be like, oh yeah, yeah, I threw it in the incinerator, and we take their word for it. We need something that's like, yeah, no, this was registered and destroyed, and we have the proof of it.
You do the same thing with the dirty cop.
That's what I'm saying, trying to prevent dirty cops.
You catch a dirty cop, there's no, see, the problem is with dirty cops, have like this police union now that is just like this Nazi thing, like a cop can do no wrong because he's got the union.
I see what you're saying there.
So you hear the cop
saying that? Yeah, I'm calling it an engagement. Oh, some good ideas, man. That's been actually some good stuff. I mean,
looking at how. And I found a job for you at Lululemon that pays $80 to $120,000 a year.
Lululemon.
All the whole dealing with Lululemon are sustainable.
Huh. Really?
Yeah. So the Partner Sustainability Manager maintains systems and processes to ensure Lululemon's business partners are aware of and effectively implement Lululemon's Vendor Code of Ethics. You would report to the Global Manager of Partner Sustainability. You'd work with the cross-functional business partners to ensure the manufacturing facilities making the products meet international standards and local labor laws in areas such as wages, working hours, environment, health and safety, and that the vendor partners have capacity to proactively contribute to positive societal and business impact. Yet, you'd be reporting to someone based in Thailand.
Really?
Yeah. And you'd lead and be accountable for sustainability performance, compliance, and beyond compliance for finished goods, fabric mills, and subcontractor facilities. So you'd be traveling to Asia a lot.
This company's based in Thailand, it sounds like.
Well, this is a Vancouver job.
Yeah, I'd be working the
Yeah, you'd
retail.
Be working in Vancouver.
But these guys manufacture mostly overseas in Asia.
Okay. That's interesting.
Oh, but they want, like, really good Spanish.
Hence the 80,000. All right, Duolingo.
Yeah. 61 people have already applied, but it's been on here for 30 plus days.
Well, I'm sure a position like that, they're going to want to be. They'll probably have a vetting. Quite the person. Hey,
yep.
The pens are crazy.
Yep.
So I had this crazy idea, and I want to kind of brainstorm with you.
Mm-hmm.
This is just world solving world problems kind of thing, but
okay.
All right, so building a facility that has a nuclear plant surrounded by basically emergency and army infrastructure, because it would probably be a, you know, if you take the thing that something would go wrong, but the power plants are pretty safe, even if you flew a plane into it. Well, anyways,
yeah.
So it says the book, but.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, you basically, you know, nationalize power, like, you know, like literally hydro and stuff. Everyone pays taxes to these things, but it's like a right rather than a, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna, what do you think of that?
Maybe.
Okay. Well, that's a bit of bam. I'm trying to see if, is it even a feasible idea, is it? Yeah.
Is it, like, is it feasible on a governmental level? Well, it unfortunately right now, no. Not in Canada. Because everything power related has been downloaded to the provinces.
So it has to be nationalized.
You can't do that in Canada. You can't move things from, well, you can, but you have to have
consent of all the provinces.
Yeah, unanimous.
Okay, so it'd have to be a very good plan.
Oh yeah.
Okay, all right.
There's also an environmental superintendent. Sounds cool, and then you realize it's a gold mine.
Hmm. Yeah, it's like, oh man, try and mitigate my impact.
I mean, you'd be mitigating issues.
I'd rather not solve it. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's not mitigate, you have to...
And you're not a geotechnical engineer, so. Let alone a senior one.
I'm just...